We're looking further into the juridical portions of Torah. Now remember, in theory, Western jurisprudence and criminal justice system is ostensibly based on the biblical system. This is not to say we're under the law of Moses, but it is to say that the law of Moses, the Torah, does give us the principles and guidelines for the divine perspective of justice. And for any kind of a just criminal justice system to work, a fair one, it needs to be predicated on these principles. Well, in some ways it may be, in some ways it is, but in other ways it is not. Look with me, please, to Exodus chapter 22, verse 1. If a man steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it or sells it, he shall pay 5 oxen for the ox and 4 sheep for the sheep. If the thief is caught while breaking in and is struck so that he dies, there'll be no blood guiltiness on his account. But if the sun has risen on him, he will be blood guiltiness on his account. He shall surely make restitution. If he owns nothing, then he shall be sold, that is, as an indentured servant for his theft. If what he stole is actually found alive in his possession, whether an ox or a donkey or a sheep, he shall pay double. If a man lets a field or vineyard be grazed bare and lets his animal loose so that it grazes in another man's field, he shall make restitution for the best of his own field and the best of his own vineyard. If a fire breaks out and spreads to thorn bushes, so that stacked grain or standing grain or the field itself is consumed, he who started the fire shall surely make restitution. If a man gives his neighbor money or goods to keep for him, and it's stolen from the man's house, if the thief is caught, he shall pay double. If the thief is not caught, then the owner of the house shall appear before the judges to determine whether he had his hands on his neighbor's property. For every breach of trust, whether it is for ox, for donkey, for sheep, for clothing, or for any lost thing about which one says, "This is it," the case of both parties shall come before the judges. He whom the judges condemn shall pay double to his neighbor. If a man gives his neighbor a donkey, an ox, a sheep, or any animal to keep for him, and if it dies or is hurt or is driven away while no one is looking, an oath before the Lord shall be made by the two of them that he has not laid hands on his neighbor's property, and his owner shall accept it, and he shall make restitution. But if it is actually stolen from him, he shall make restitution to its owner. If it is all torn to pieces, let him bring it as evidence. He shall not make restitution for what has been torn to pieces. If a man borrows anything from his neighbor and it's injured or dies while its owner is not with it, he shall make full restitution. If its owner is with it, he shall not make restitution. If it is hired, it came for its hire. Let's begin with these first 15 verses and see how far we get today. God's concept, God's principles, God's perspective, God's parameters of criminal justice. Notice the conspicuous absence of imprisonment. There was no imprisonment in Israel's justice system. There were capital crimes, and there were crimes requiring restitution. There were crimes that could result in flogging, but there were no prisons as such. As you know from our previous Bible studies, the closest thing to imprisonment was for unintentional crime, particularly manslaughter, in the city of refuge, where the person who committed the manslaughter, act of manslaughter, unintentional killing, homicide, would have to stay until the high priest died, prefiguring Jesus as the high priest. They would be confined to a city of refuge. But there was no prisons as such. God's system of justice explained in these verses. There's more that we'll be looking at, but God's perspective of justice is devoid of imprisonment. I think God must have known something we didn't. Prisons make people worse. They don't tend to make people better. The recidivism rate is extremely, extremely high. There are better ways of deterrence. If a man steals an ox or sheep and slaughters it or sells it, he shall pay 5 oxen for the ox, 4 for the sheep. God looks at justice in terms of penal attribution as damages and restitution to the victim. God's perspective of justice is based on restitution to the victim. That comes first in the divine perspective of justice. It's not about getting convictions. It's not about how many you can lock up. It is about the rights of the person whose rights were violated. It is about compensation to the victim. That is God's focus. If we replaced a prison system with forced expropriation of resources, forced expropriation of resources, and if the person didn't have the resource, forced labor, that is restitution houses. We will pay you $14 for every one of these things you make. You will be taxed like anybody else, but you must pay $30,000 in damages to the person who you robbed or whose property you injured in the perpetration of a crime. But that was only $10,000 worth of damages. Yeah, but you're paying them back 40. 4 sheep for 1. And that's not rewarding a victim. But it does serve as a far better deterrent. Well, how many can I make at 14? 14 apiece. How many hours a day you want to work? And by the way, the support of your wife or your children is coming out of your wages. You're going to be paying restitution. Your sentence will not be measured in time. Your sentence will be measured in restitution. That was God's perspective. That was God's perspective. You got these guys rioting and things like them stealing the computers. No, you don't pay for the computing. You're buying 4 computers. That's not fair. I only stole one. Well, no, it wasn't fair that you stole the one. That's the law. That kind of penal system should replace the criminal justice system, ideally. Now, am I saying that they're not people who must be incarcerated like those who are clinically insane? Well, there are. There are murderers with diminished responsibility that psychiatric opinion, 10% to the court sustainable argumentation that if they weren't mentally ill, they wouldn't have done it. So we can't execute them. But it's still a crime. Somebody who's criminally insane is still a criminal. There may be cases. Now, in biblical times, this was exile from the community. Exile from the community. These people would be put out into the desert. They'd have to go survive for themselves in exile. That is not a viable option in the modern world. I'm not saying we take these exact laws and we apply them today, but I'm saying that we should take the principles. We should take the principles upon which the divine criminal justice system is predicated and make our laws based on them. Let's look at the next one. If the thief is caught while breaking in and is struck so he dies, there'll be no blood guiltiness on his account. The outrage, again, I'm not pontificating politically, but the outrage. You had this 70-something-year-old man from the Dominican Republic, a legal immigrant. He had a green card. He was working in a bodega. If you're not from New York or Los Angeles, a bodega is a grocery shop in a Hispanic neighborhood. Okay. He was working in a bodega. And this guy comes in and tries to rob him and stab him. And he, this 70-something-year-old man kills this guy in self-defense, much younger than he is. A corrupt prosecutor funded by George Soros, and again, I'm just stating the facts, a pro-crime prosecutor who's now politically, with political motivation, prosecuting Donald Trump, wanted to prosecute this 70-something-year-old man for killing in self-defense, making the person who tried to kill him, the thief, the victim. This happened in New York City. That is how antithetical to divine justice the criminal justice system has become in the United States and in certain other countries. The victim becomes the culprit. The person who acts in self-defense is incriminated, but the criminal is set free. These were to apply to everybody. To apply to everybody. Justice was supposed to be blind. Justice isn't. There were cases, and again, I'm not saying justice was not served. I'm just stating certain facts. The actress, Claudine Langer, who had been married to the singer, Andy Williams, charged with murder. If somebody without that kind of money, was put on trial for the same crime, it's very unlikely they would have walked. It is very unlikely if somebody did not have the money of O.J. Simpson, he would have walked based on the evidence gleaned from the police. I've had Christian lawyers tell me, justice, how much justice do you want to buy? If there's a problem with capital punishment, it's the fact that it's those without the capital who get the punishment. If you see a wealthy person going down for a crime, there's some political motivation to it. I don't like Harvey Weinstein. He's a left-wing funder of left-wing causes. I couldn't stand the guy. I have no sympathy for the guy. But had there not been a political motivation, he wouldn't have gone down the way he's gone down. Now, there are more exaggerated cases of this. I've been to Saudi Arabia. You see this in Saudi Arabia. There's two standards of justice. There's one for the members of the House of Saud. If a member of the House of Saud is decapitated, which happened to a princess once and somebody else, there was a political reason for it. Okay. You've got this foreign labor, people from the Philippines and from poor Muslim countries like Pakistan. Under Sharia, the application of Islamic law is brutal to the poor. Brutal. You see this in the Emirates. You see it throughout the Muslim world, but Saudi Arabia may be the most extreme example of which I'm personally familiar, or that I've been to. Though I've read reliable accounts of it happening, transpiring elsewhere in the Muslim world. Islam is even more unjust. But it's the same thing. Human nature is human nature. When you see a person of position, power, political connection going down, there's usually some political reason for it. Otherwise, they're going to somehow get off the hook, not necessarily be exonerated, but a death sentence will be terminated. They'll get a presidential pardon, which are given out by politicians. There'll be something. They'll have the top lawyers and they'll negotiate and they'll plead to lesser charges and so forth and so forth and so forth. You see this? People who are guilty will use anything for a defense. Now, if somebody has been victimized themselves repeatedly and abused, you have somebody, a young girl who was repeatedly raped by her father or her mother. This happens in Muslim countries. And she kills him in self-defense. In Saudi Arabia, she's going to be decapitated. They'll chop her head off, most likely. Most likely. People can be driven to do things, but they do them in desperation of self-defense. Verse 2, if he strikes him and he dies, there'll be no blood guiltiness. If you kill in self-defense, in the last 3 days, two left-wing activists reaped the fruit of their own arrogant stupidity. One was somebody who was formerly homeless, who cleaned up his act and became a left-wing journalist and activist in Philadelphia, Josh Kruger. Somebody came into his house and shot him to death. He was anti-police. Defund the police. I don't agree with what happened to him. It was wrong. Murder is murder. But he reaped the fruits of his own stupidity. In New York City, day before yesterday, another left-wing activist with his girlfriend was knifed. Knifed. Now, he was against guns. Now he wishes he had a gun. Taking away the right of honest citizens to defend themselves. Does anybody in their right mind really think if you outlaw guns that criminals are going to give up their guns? I spent a lot of time in Northern Ireland during what they call the Troubles. A lot. I remember being there, people getting shot every day, tit for tat, back and forth, plus bombings. I've seen some terrible things there, as I have in Israel. Only the police, the military, and prison guards have a weapon. You can't get a gun in Ireland, and you certainly cannot get a gun in Northern Ireland. It's almost impossible to get a gun, except on a hunting club in England or Great Britain. You can't get a weapon. Only the cops had guns. Only the army had guns. No, 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 no. The only ones who had guns were the police, the army, the prison service, and the terrorists. The UVF, the UDH, the IRA, the INLA, they always had weapons. Somehow, this stupid idea of taking the rights of an honest citizen away to defend their family, their home, and themselves is going to stop crime. Again, I don't want to sound like I'm pontificating politically. I'm only readdressing what historically developed. Gun control was invented by the Democratic Party in the American South during the Jim Crow era. Its purpose was to stop Black Americans from defending themselves from the Ku Klux Klan. The Klan would show up on a Black person's house at the middle of the night with his family, his wife, and kids, and they would set a cross on fire, threaten to kill him. They didn't want these Blacks to be able to defend themselves. So they began to campaign for gun control. That's what they did. It was something to disarm Blacks so they would not have the means of self-defense in the American South. I think that every person, irrespective of their race, who lives in a high crime neighborhood, would be out of their mind not to get some lessons in gun safety and firearm proficiency and be able to defend yourself. I live in Great Britain. Great Britain is a country that has much less gun crime than in the United States, but much higher knife crime. and much higher rate of burglary. Much higher. If a burglar thinks he might get shot breaking into somebody's house, he's going to find another house. Knife crime is very ugly. A knife will kill you just as dead as a gun. The scripture affirms the right of people to kill in self-defense. Thou shalt not murder. It does not say thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not murder. He who lives by the sword dies by the sword. It's the criminal who lives by the sword, not the honest citizen defending himself and his family. The highest murder rate in the United States is black on black crime. Why should honest black people who work for a living not have the right to defend themselves from drug gangs and I don't know. Ask the Ku Klux Klan. And the way they lie and package this stuff, as it's a moral cause that'll prevent crime. No, it doesn't. It makes more crime. I've seen this in Northern Ireland. The criminals will always get guns. If you outlaw guns, it's only honest citizens who are going to be disarmed, not criminals. Look what happened in Baltimore. I'm speaking in Baltimore shortly. My father's family came to Baltimore from Europe. In Baltimore, predominantly black city now. The mayor was black. Most of the members of the city council were black. Members of Congress were black, including Elijah Cummings, who's now dead. The police commissioner was black. The police chief was black. And most of the policemen were black. The district attorney was black. The mayor and the prosecutor told the police to stand down during the riots. There were dozens of murders. Everybody murdered was black. Yet they tried to racialize it. Who are you protesting? Caucasians? What Caucasians? The DA is black. The police chief is black. Most of the cops are black. The mayor is black. They're killing your own people. They're even killing children. And this went on day after day after day. Then Mosby, the DA, was caught in corruption. She's been indicted and she's under criminal prosecution for corruption, bribery, whatever it is. God does not take any of that into account. The only thing God cares about is justice for the victim, the right of self-defense. Verse 3, if the sun has risen on him, otherwise, if he doesn't get killed after he does the breaking entry, there'll be blood guiltiness on his account. He'll make restitution. If he owns nothing, he'll be sold for his theft. He will be sold into bondservantship. Until the year of Jubilee, you will work for this person and produce for him. Now, today, that doesn't mean you use him as a gardener. We could put him in a restitution house or whatever it is, but you will compensate the victim. When you rob somebody or hurt somebody, it has to be known you're going to be putting money in their pocket. And that money will be coming out of yours. That is the divine perspective of justice. Prisons were largely invented in the Dark Ages, and they were used as debtor prisons. Debtor prisons were not places that were houses of restitution. It was, you owe him this much money, and we're going to lock you up till you can pay it. Well, how am I going to pay it if I'm in jail? That's your problem. Is that justice? It's not even common sense. Now, I'm not saying that there may not be circumstances where some kind of incarceration is necessary. Some kind of incarceration may be necessary, but it should be the exception. It should not be the rule. If what he stole is found alive, whether an ox or a donkey, he's not only got to restore, he's got to pay double its value. Notice, it's not 5 years, it's not 10 years. It's you're given 2, 3, 4, 5 times the value of what you stole. That sounds like a pretty good deterrent to me. Who wants to be working for somebody else? If a man lets a field or vineyard be grazed bare and his animals loose, so it damages another person's field, he'll make restitution from the best of his own and the best of his own vineyard. You are responsible for what is done by your possessions. You are liable. You are culpable. If a fire breaks out and spreads to thorn bushes so that the stacked grain or standing grain on the field is consumed, he who started the fire shall give his neighbor money or goods to keep for him, and it is stolen from the man's house, if the thief is caught, he shall pay double. Again, restitution. You don't see it saying 5 years, 10 years. 5 years, no early parole, life, no parole. It doesn't talk about that stuff. If the thief is not caught, in verse 8, the owner of the house shall appear before the judges. He can still go to court to determine whether he had his hands on his neighbor's property. If something is stolen that belongs to somebody else while it's in your possession, they were still to have a legal claim. This was mine. You were taking care of it. You may have the option to forgive, but you also have the option to litigate. Always on the victim. Every breach of trust, whether it's for an ox, a donkey, or a sheep, for clothing or any lost thing. Now, these are, of course, talking about material items, but they, of course, have a figurative application to things spiritual. This is it. The case of both parties shall come before the judges. He whom the judges condemn shall pay double to his neighbor. There were rules of evidence, and the judges decide. There was no jury trial. There was no jury trial. Now, this is not to say I'm against jury trials. I'm simply saying that they do not have a biblical basis per se. The Levites adjudicated things on the basis of the word of God. We don't do that now. We have separation of church and state, and rightly so, under the new covenant. Rightly so. However, the principles by which the judges adjudicate are based on the law of God. One of the most disgusting, reprehensible things I've ever witnessed in my life as an American citizen was after campaigning as a pro-life candidate The first thing Ronald Reagan, the late president, did was, well, he lied to Christian America. He just basically lied. He appointed a pro-abortion judge to the Supreme Court, Sandra Day O'Connor. After campaigning, he was pro-life. He just out and out lied. And naive Christians believed him. Not that I support his opponent politically. I'm just saying Reagan lied. He appointed Sandra Day O'Connor, this pro-abortion judge. Some of the worst judges in American history. In fact, most of the worst ones have been Republicans appointed by Republicans. And believe me, I'm no Democrat. There are people who naively think that if you vote Republican as well, Ronald Reagan appointed a pro-abortion judge when he said he wouldn't. Now, one of the few politicians that I'm not campaigning for, I don't even plan to vote for him, as you know, is Donald Trump. But he did keep his word on appointing the kind of judges he said. However, the homosexual judge in California, who with the stroke of a pen outlawed Proposition 8, demolishing the democratic will of the people of California to have heterosexual marriage, was a homosexual. In his decision, and you should read that decision, it's shocking. He blames Christianity for homophobia as a homosexual himself. He did not recuse himself. This is a legal court decision condemning Christianity for homophobia. And despite the fact that most of the people in California wanted heterosexual marriage, he outlawed it and got away with it. Who appointed that devil, that homosexual, to the bench? George Bush. Who nominated that devil to the bench? Ronald Reagan. When prayer was ordered out of the schools, what was Earl Warren, the Chief Justice? A Republican. He ordered God out of the classroom. Under Warren Burger, Roe v. Wade, who ordered God out of the maternity ward? A Republican. Roberts is the same now. It is not about politics. They are all enemies of justice as God defines justice. So, Sandra Day O'Connor wrote the Supreme Court's decision outlawing the Ten Commandments from being in a judicial building in the state of Alabama. There was a monument of the Decalogue in front of the judicial building in the state of Alabama's capital, Montgomery. The Supreme Court said, no, you can't have that there. Remove the Ten Commandments. We don't want man's laws to be influenced by anybody's religious opinion, as in Judeo-Christian. So this pro-abortion judge appointed by Reagan writes the decision and orders the Ten Commandments taken out of the judicial building in Alabama. A wicked, wicked woman appointed by a hypocritical liar of a politician. I'm only stating what happened. Once you remove man's laws from God's laws, once the judicial principles, once the divine perspective of justice is forcibly divorced from the judiciary in any democracy, justice will go in to terminal decline. A 70-something-year-old man being prosecuted for murder for protecting himself from a thief who tried to kill him. People are being murdered You've got prosecutors like Paul Krasner, a left-wing Jew in Philadelphia, Kim Fox in Chicago, Bragg in New York, etc. These people are not there for judicial purposes. They are there for political purposes. The judiciary becomes politicized. It's not an independent judiciary about justice. It's a political judiciary. Well, how did that happen? How can you try to prosecute a man, an old man, for defending himself from somebody trying to kill him? It's simple. How can you have such abomination? It is illegal to commercially traffic in human body parts. This week in California, it didn't begin this week. Somebody who exposed the trafficking in human body parts of aborted fetuses. Now, look, you can get stem cells. You can harvest stem cells from placenta tissue or from naturally miscarried babies. You don't have to abort to get stem cells. But it was exposed that Planned Parenthood was doing it. Did anybody from Planned Parenthood go to jail? Were they indicted? Were they even indicted for a felony? No. Harris, the Vice President of the United States, was appointed District Attorney of California. She climbed the political ladder by committing adultery with another woman's husband, the Speaker of the Assembly in the state of California in Sacramento, Willie Brown. And he backs her, and she winds up Attorney General before she becomes Senator and then Vice President. She prosecutes the person for exposing it, for exposing the felony, not for the felony. Now remember, approximately 7 out of 10 of those babies being aborted for no medical consideration are black. 7 out of 10 of those babies are black babies. Yet the people standing up and saying this is wrong, this is murder, are being called white racists. Well, this past week, nothing happened with Planned Parenthood and will not likely happen. But the person was found guilty in the court, liable in a civil action, not just a criminal action, in a civil action, and ordered by the court to pay $18 million in damages. You committed a felony. You were trafficking in human body parts. The person who exposed it is criminally prosecuted, indicted and criminally prosecuted, and now they have to pay $18 million to the perpetrator of a crime. Now, notice God says it's the victim who gets compensated. In California, the perpetrator of the crime gets compensated. How can anybody in their right mind imagine this to be justice? How did this happen? Easy. Take the Ten Commandments out of the court. How did it happen? Ask Reagan's judge, Sandra Day O'Connor. That's how it happened. When man's laws no longer derive from God's laws, man's laws become evil. And that's what we're seeing. And so we see liability. We see criminal liability and we see civil liability. Verse 12. He shall make restitution to the owner. It was stiff sentencing. but not incarceration. The sentences were non-custodial. It was not about locking somebody up. It was about compensating the victim. I know people, a lot of friends of mine were saved in jail or in prison. I have close friends who were saved in prison. They'll all tell you, God may use prison in somebody's life to break them and make them turn to God. A lot of people are saved in prisons. That is true. But that's about the only good thing I can say about them. That's a big thing, but it does nothing, nothing. You lock somebody up with criminals, what happens? They become more criminally minded. There are people who went into prison as petty thieves, who were locked up with professional thieves, and then they came out professional thieves. Just look at the rates of recidivism. And then when you don't prosecute them, and they will make gender a defense, they will make race a defense, they will make... It is a fact that most pedophiles, were molested as children themselves. This affected their sexual orientation psychologically in early adolescence. Not all, but most pedophiles were in some way sexually violated themselves as children. Is that a defense for them as an adult molesting another child? Common sense would dictate they know how evil it is and what it did to them. So they do it to somebody else? That testifies to the depravity, of course, of the human condition and fallen man. No, having been a victim does not justify you being a perpetrator. When most people killed in Chicago are black people killed by other blacks, how can you make race a defense? It's not even rational. I saw a picture of a lady who lost her daughter, and she made like a collage of all the graves of children in Chicago, just in Chicago, South Side mostly, shot going to and from school. A couple of dozens, 3-4 dozen kids shot dead going to school. What, you can't send your little kid to school? And every one of those children were Afro-American. Unbelievable. But they'll make a race defense. They'll make the fact that they were victimized a defense. They will make, they were economically underprivileged, the defense. Oh, I remember West Side Story when I was a kid. It was all satirized. West Side Story is like Leonard Bernstein took the story of Romeo and Juliet and he retold it about street gangs on the west side of Manhattan between Puerto Rican and Italian American gangs. And you know, Officer Krumke, you did it again. This boy doesn't need a job. He needs a year in the pen. Nobody wants a fellow with a social disease. You know, we used to watch that to laugh at it when I was a kid. Of course, we knew people like that, but it was satirizing, you know, what was going on in New York at the time. We knew about that stuff. And it was since the 1950s and 60s, people have been talking about this. My grandmother was from Liverpool, England, Merseyside. And she came to New York, as did many people, because life was so difficult financially and economically for families. And they came to New York to try to get a piece of the pie. People were poor. The British welfare state didn't exist then in the state it does now, which is another problem. Be that as it may, I remember England was shocked when two kids, 10, 11 years old, took a two-year-old baby, abducted him from his mother in a supermarket, dragged him down to a railway line, and brutally murdered him. Brutally. This little boy's name was Jamie Bulger. People were a lot poorer than that when my grandmother left Liverpool. A lot poorer. But a crime like that would have been unthinkable. One of the great geniuses of American popular culture and popular music is the composer George Gershwin and his brother Ira. George Gershwin was classically trained, but he wrote jazz. He wrote what it was, the pop music of the day. But he had this idea of a kind of operetta where he would combine opera with Black American gospel music. And he went down to the American South during the days of Jim Crow. I mean, people living in shacks with no electricity or indoor plumbing. And he learned about their music from the church. And he learned about their culture and their economic conditions. And he wrote Porgy and Bess, composed Porgy and Bess. I got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me. To have this Jewish guy from New York going down there and taking this thing from the Deep South and making and combining the Black gospel tradition with opera, it set a precedent at the time. Another Broadway musical popularized by the comedian Joey Brown was Showboat. And it was the same thing. It was showing the development of Black American music in the American South. And this became something. And those the musical and the movie based on it and the Broadway show, they were very keen to show the injustices perpetrated against American blacks in the South. This is even in the aftermath of the Civil War. And the incredible voice he had, Paul Robeson, he's singing Old Man River. Black folks work while the white folks play, work and work and work all day. Pull that barge, tote them bales. You get a little drunk. And your land's in jail. The music really tried to portray the experience of the people suffering this injustice. It was unspeakable racism and injustice. They still had slavery by a different name. Even though slavery was abolished, it was perpetuated with chain gangs and things like arresting people for stupid stuff and all this. It was the same thing, practically. Blacks began leaving the South and coming to Chicago and New York just to get away from it. In Detroit, yeah, things like that. Okay, it was ugly, an ugly, ugly time. After the Second World War, Black veterans who got shot on the beach at Omaha Beach on D-Day, they were hung, strung up and hung by the Klan. They were lynched by the Klan in the late 1940s. Stuff that's unbelievable by today's standards. Yet, very few black children were born out of wedlock. The one thing they had was their faith that gave them a hope and a moral standard that propelled them towards education and upward mobility. Something they had. You didn't see this kind of crime. You didn't see this kind of immorality in the black. These were people. Just listen to the hymns of Mahalia Jackson. These were people of Christian faith. You didn't do this stuff. It would have been a shame and a disgrace. All you got to do is take God's laws and divorce them from man's laws. And you're going to have social, legal, and moral chaos. That's what you're going to have. And that's what we have. It's only the narrative. They lie, they lie, they lie. No. All you got to do is take the Ten Commandments and throw them out the window. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Throw that out the window. Thou shalt not murder. What's human life? You can shoot a kid on the way to school. Throw it out the window. Thou shalt not steal. Oh, we're justified in stealing. Look what happens. I've been reading articles about food deserts in minority communities because of the crime. Can you imagine an old lady or an older lady, retired lady, having to get on a bus and sometimes two buses to go to a supermarket because there's no supermarket where she lives because the supermarket was losing money because of the theft. And the prosecutors wouldn't prosecute the shopper. Who gets hurt by this? Oh, my God. This is terrible. It's terrible. How does it happen? Easy. Throw the Ten Commandments out the window. That's all you got to do. All you have to do is what has been done in Great Britain, what has been done in the United States, what's been done in Canada, what's done in Australia. That's all you have to do is divorce God's law from man's laws. Throw it out the window. Now, again, I do not believe in a church state. I believe in an institutional separation of the two. But I do believe, as anybody with a fifth grade education can read for themselves, they are endowed by their creator. The Declaration of Independence and the Constitution are theistic documents. The principles of democracy and of democratic justice are predicated on a belief in the divine standard. That's gone. That's gone. Democrat, Republican, they're both guilty. White, black, they're both guilty. The society is guilty. All of these Protestant democracies are guilty. There'll be no justice. How much justice you want to buy? There'll be moral disintegration. There'll be systemic breakdown of the judicial system. It can only fail. Throw God's law out the window, and man's laws will not matter. We'll leave it there until next week.